This is Ignition Point, Clayton Bradley Academy's podcast, where every day we work to help students excel through critical thinking, problem solving, collaboration, and use of our lifelong guidelines and life skills. Today's podcast is going to be a two-part podcast where we're talking with Melanie Reed. Melanie Reed is a professor of law at Lincoln Memorial University and also one of our parents, and she's talking about Harkness and the impact Harkness had on her when she initially discovered this model through Clayton Bradley Academy, and also how she's tried to then take that into the college level, some of the challenges they faced, some of the successes they've had along the way. And so she's going to be talking to us about that. So at this time, we join part one of an interview with Melanie Reed and your host, Kendall Terry. I'd like to welcome to the podcast today Melanie Reed. Melanie is one of the parents of a student here at CBA, but also works for LMU's law school. And I just want to welcome you to the podcast and give you a chance to, you know, talk a little bit about yourself for a minute and introduce yourself to the podcast.
Well, I'm thrilled to be here, Kendall. I'm a big fan of Ignition Point podcast. Listen to it all the time. And I lived in Knoxville, I think about 14 years. I actually moved here for the job of professor over at LMU. And I have a fourth grade CBA boy, and he is loving it and has been here since he's been in kindergarten. And
oh, wow.
So I just love being here.
That's cool. The funny interaction I think we first had, you came up to me, and I think it was after a coffee and tea or whatever, and you were like, "You're Kendall Terry from the Ignition Point podcast."
I did, because I recognize your voice.
I
like,
thought
oh
that
my
was
gosh,
great.
This is Kendall Terry.
That's right.
And of course, my son's like rolling his eyes like, "Easy there, Mom. It's okay." I'm like, "No, this is great." See, because when you're a professor, like at graduate level, even undergrad, we don't take education classes.
Yeah.
I know how to practice law, but I don't know how to teach.
Yeah.
And so for me, listening to the podcast has been really great. First of all, I have a son who doesn't verbalize what he does. I mean, I say, "What did you do today?" And it's like, stuff. You know,
right.
So if I don't hear it from the podcast or if I don't get it from the teacher email, I don't know what's going on. So as a parent, I'm really glad
yeah.
you do things like this. But secondly, it also gives me such great ideas about education and how to, you know, what goes into the process and the neuroscience. I'm kind of a nerd like that. I love that stuff. So
yeah.
I'm really glad you do this. So yes, I recognized your voice right away.
That's hilarious. Well, it was like the first time that's ever happened to me. So I don't know what that says about how many listeners I have, but
you got them. They're out there.
They're out there. You know, the metrics on the back end says that there are people that listen. Hopefully it's not just the same people every, you know, over and over and over, but no, it's that's one of the reasons why we put the podcast together, was to talk about the model for people to know more than what you can see, even to say, come visit. We want people to come visit. We have a whole opportunity for people to come and see what we do and that sort of thing. But it's a matter of just that continual conversation, because there's so many cool things that happen throughout the school year. And we try to highlight those when we can. We try to get people in to talk about the different things that are going on around the school, but also just this model of instruction that we're trying to focus on how the brain learns, use what research says about how the brain learns, and then implement that in the classroom. Because you know this as well, you know, working at the graduate level, but there's a lot that is done as far as on the research side of like how something works or how something should happen. And then there's that whole implementation side that is a whole another level. You know, it's one thing to read the research. It's another thing then to say, well, what does this look like in a classroom whenever there's 18 little ones looking back at you, the door's closed, and you're the only adult in the room? How does that translate from what we know research says about this particular part of learning? How does that actually look in a classroom? And so we try to keep that conversation going all the time. And that's part of why we've got you on the podcast today.
Well, and I think it's unique here at CBA because you've been able to establish it in the culture and as a community. So you see the common threads. I mean, I've only gone from kindergarten to fourth at this point, but I see how all the teachers kind of have bought in to this idea of how to teach. And you see it every year when I, you know, talked to Ms. Barham last year in third grade. I mean, within 30 seconds, she could tell me why, you know, how my son is specifically motivated
yeah.
and how to teach to his style versus another child. Or, you know, I had a couple fourth grade boys in the back seat the other day, and I was like, how are you guys liking fourth grade? And they're like, Miss Lovin is wonderful, because I'm like, why? And they're like, because she just cares. And so we want to do well in her class because we tell she really cares about us. So the things that you talk about in the podcast, I'm seeing every year. So you've developed this community. So it's not like just pockets of faculty that buy into this. It's like life skills, lifelong guidelines, the things that you, Linda Jordan, talk about. I see it every year. So I think that's something that's really special.
And it's one of the things that we try to do from pre-K all the way up through 12th grade, which is a unique model and a unique experience for people to come on campus, because typically you'll see like somebody doing something really well at preschool, or you'll see them doing something really well in elementary or really well at middle school. But to have that full gamut of, no, we think this model is able to be done really well from three-year-olds all the way up through 12th grade. And that's kind of part of our mission then of how do we implement this? What do lifelong guidelines and life skills look like? Because it's real easy at times to say, oh, I see why you're teaching this at the elementary level. And then you get to middle school and it's like, well, how does this apply now to middle schoolers? Well, no, we still need middle schoolers that can have integrity. We still need middle schoolers that show effort. We still need middle schoolers that can have curiosity and creativity and sense of humor, and you know, as they're going through that. So it changes, but we need now people that want to embrace that middle school time and teach that there. And then what does this look like now at the high school level? And so we need teachers that can embrace those high school students and help teach that there. And that's a challenge that happens, especially if you're not in that level, because you look at middle schoolers and you go, oh man, there's so many things going on. But then you look at teachers that really love to be in middle school, and it's like they just embrace that whole part of their life. You know, the last 2 weeks on the podcast, you heard Stephen Otis talking about how he does Harkness and how it looks different at middle school than it does at high school. But it's part of him embracing that, like, what's going on with a middle schooler right now.
Yes.
And the kids love it. They buy in to what he's doing. And if you try to put a high schooler in that mentality, it doesn't work. You know, so when you get to high school level, then you have to change that again. And I'm assuming that you would then see that at the college level. It has to change again to fit what's going on in a college age kid's brain and life and where they're at, what they're trying to accomplish and those sort of things. And so you have, as a parent, kind of been introduced to some things early on, and you saw and interacted with Harkness, and Scott Hussey was actually the one that was like, oh, you need to talk to Melanie Reed and get her on the podcast. And when we were talking about Harkness for the past couple of weeks, and I was like, well, tell me a little bit more. And I had interacted with you some too. So he was telling me about some of the stuff that you had come and observed, and then some things that you had been trying to do at the college level. And I think that's pretty wild. So when you looked at that as a college professor, and you're coming into a classroom to observe, you know, Harkness, to observe this brain-based model, what were you seeing that you were intrigued about, but what were you seeing like, hey, I need to figure out how to carry this into a college classroom then?
Yeah, well, first I heard Scott on the podcast, and I chuckled because I'll never forget when I heard him say, Harkness! Like the... that he learned from that Dallas teacher.
Yeah.
And I was like, I want to know more of this. And I think particularly because I teach at the law school level, and the average, I guess they're adults, obviously. It's about between 24 and 26.
Okay.
And what I'm noticing at that level is there's a very short attention span.
Mm.
Difficult to focus for long periods of time, which is difficult when you have a 90-minute class.
Yeah.
And also they're not actively learning and they're not interacting, we lose them because of the technology.
Yep.
So I was also noticing that they were not reading for class, or at least having a deeper learning for the material before class. So when I heard Scott talk about Harkness, I thought this could be a potential solution. So I reached out to him, and he was just gracious enough to let me go into his classroom to experience what it's like. And at first I thought, oh, this is kind of rough, because he was quiet, they were all in the circle, and they were talking about something that really didn't have anything to do with the text, but they thought it was, because it was kind of like an epilogue of another book.
Okay.
And so I was like, oh, they're missing it. And I had to hold back because I realized, like, oh, this is kind of awkward and it's grinding. And then the next minute, it just kind of like the ideas just started exploding. And I started to see, wow, they are really connecting what the other student just said. They are proposing new ideas. They're validating each other. There's something special here. Mm. And within 45 minutes, they went from incredibly like superficial conversation to a much deeper understanding of the text. And I was like, this is it. This is what I want to try. Mm. So I tried it in a seminar format. And essentially, I used, you know, Scott helped me with his materials on Harkness to kind of explain to the students how, again, I want them to use this opportunity to speak up and share their opinion, but also connect. So active listening mm-hmm. to what others are saying, use your critical thinking skills to propose new ideas and solutions in relationship to the issues that were being discussed, and also practice your empathy, right? Listening to others, validating them by name. So, I mean, I really could take something that's being used at the high school level here, and it was amazing.
Yeah.
Because, you know, to a certain extent, it causes them to interact with each other and listen in a way that in a normal setting, when you just got the sage on the stage lecturing to them, you've lost them.
Yeah. Well, and we talked about that with the previous podcast of so many times in traditional education, that's what it is, right? It's students come in, they sit in rows where they're facing the front, they're not facing anybody else. And their whole goal is, you know, get everything that this person that's gonna come in and teach me, get everything they can teach me. I'm gonna write down whatever notes I can write down, and then that's gonna somehow impart wisdom into me that I can then repeat later for a test or repeat later in a writing. And Harkness is part of that, which we understand in brain-based research, that's not the best way for a person to learn. And so Harkness kind of embraced that for us of kids can set and recognize that importance of having active listening, recognizing that importance of I need to listen to what you're saying and not just be listening to get to my turn to talk, which is so often what happens in a lot of meetings, a lot of classes of I'm going to listen to you while you're talking just so that I can get to when you stop talking so that I can say what I want to say, as opposed to listening with real value to say I want to hear what you're saying so that I can understand more about maybe the text or more about you or make bigger connections to the world than what maybe I would make just by waiting for my opportunity to say this one thought that I have over here in the book.
This is my personal opinion. I do think that the traditional educational model is broken. Because I see people at the tailor end of going through the educational system.
Yeah.
And when they walk into that classroom, we have already lost them. Because the mindset is tell me what I need to know to study for the exam. I will regurgitate it on the exam. And then I've checked the box, I've finished your course, and I've moved on to the next. It's heartbreaking.
Yeah.
And so it is absolutely critical to use active learning principles to keep them engaged, because the educational system that many have been accustomed to, they have killed the curiosity mm-hmm. and any kind of creativity that comes out of the classroom setting. So Harkness is an intentional way to get them involved again, to, as they said in the other podcast, to give them their voice and get them engaged in the conversation.
That's awesome.
And work through the text.
And so when you're talking about a class that you're trying to do this with.
Yes.
At a law school level, how many kids are sitting in that classroom?
So this is the problem. You really can't do Harkness in a class of 60-70.
Right.
So this would be more of a seminar class. And what I do is if our seminar class is 20, I'll have 10 in the Harkness, and I do kind of what I call a Harkness fishbowl.
Yep.
So I'll have the 10 in the Harkness, and then I'll have their peers in the fishbowl outside actually assessing their peers.
Oh, wow.
And then they switch. And then they go in, and they pick up where the other group left off in the Harkness.
Oh, man.
And then the others are assessing.
Yeah.
So we have, I create self-assessments, I create peer assessments, and then I do a assessment as the the professor as well. And Scott was kind enough to connect me with one of his friends that actually has created a computer program of Harkness. And so I'll actually put the program up, which traces who's talking to who, so they can follow along and see how I'm assessing them based on, are you connecting to what somebody else said? Did you validate them by saying their name and affirming them? Did you propose a new solution? Because this program actually, in real time, you can identify that and show how the Harkness is moving. It's amazing.
Well, and we didn't even get into that side of the conversation with Scott and Stephen and Josh on the previous podcast, because we were talking about kind of how Harkness is taking place, but there is this whole model of assessment that's happening. And I told him I wanted to get him back so we can talk about actually how does this translate into assessment, how does this translate into formative and summative assessment that we do in the classrooms. Because when you walk into Scott's class, when he's doing a Harkness now, it is up on the screen. Whenever he first started doing it, you know, it was on a piece of paper. And he would do it, and then he taught students, some students, how to do it as well, you know, and part of what he was doing. I don't want to act like I know everything he was doing in his classroom, but I know that there was some students also learning how to do this. And he would show them the paper, like, this is how you were talking, you know, from someone else's point, or this is how, like, the whole table was in the middle of a discussion and you just kind of threw some random thought out there. You know, we talked about that a little bit with them, but the, all of that is actually tracked as part of a Harkness conversation. And so now he was showing me the other day when I was in there, and it was on the screen, you know, and he was showing me kind of how that was happening. And he's got it up on there. Like, you can see where you're at in the conversation. You can see you as an individual. Are you doing those things, or are you kind of just being part of the table and not really inputting anything into it?
It's pretty funny, because after Scott showed me how to do it and I learned the computer program, I did actually a faculty development on all our faculty at the law school on Harkness.
Oh, wow.
And I had them do a sample Harkness.
Yeah.
And it was amazing how it got very competitive, because everybody wanted points, right? And everybody wanted, and then you had all the personalities come out, right? Because the ones that want to get the most points, they think if I challenge somebody else's, and so that I had like challengers. And then I had the affirmers, the real empaths that like wanted to bring others that were quiet, you know, getting their points by validating and affirming. And I was like, oh, fun. They've created this. It's almost like a game. And they were all kind of, you know. But I find too with students, which is interesting because they're actually statistically more females than males in law school.
Okay.
But the females that actually, that's really good students but are quiet, they initially have a hard time with Harkness. Because, you know, you have to get in the game. You have to make sure your voice is heard in a Harkness. And kind of that point system helped them a little bit to get over that initial anxiety or their introversion to kind of be like, I need to be part of this conversation. So the first couple times I did it, some of the good students, but the quiet students, had a hard time with the Harkness. But once they kind of pushed through that, they saw, okay, this is something I can be a part of. It was great.
And so what is that like when you're dealing with a law school student? So you're dealing with a student that has gotten an undergrad degree.
Yes.
And has probably been successful in an undergrad degree to be able to get to the point of being accepted into law school.
Yes.
And a lot of times what you see are people that have, in essence, played the game, right? It's that broken game that you've talked about, but it's, I know how to show up in class, I know how to take notes, I know how to, you know, memorize for the test, I know how to, you know, figure out the professor to write down, you know, the way they want me to write or whatever. And so when you get a kid then that you're sitting down at a table that you're saying, no, I want to hear your point, like your connections, or I want, all of a sudden the game that they are good at playing is kind of out the window. Now, they've probably been good students, so you would think that they would read, although maybe they don't read as much as they should. But what's that like? You talked about the introvert there, that you know, kind of how they figured that out. But what's that like with your students of these kids have been successful playing the game? That's why they are at that level, I would imagine.
Yes,
I'm making an assumption there. But
yes, students that are great memorizers are going to make it to that stage, because memorization is really key.
Yeah.
In a lot of, unfortunately, a lot of undergraduate And that's why we have a really hard time sometimes at the law school level with writing.
Yeah.
You know, because a lot of law school exams are writing exams and critical thinking. And unfortunately, I mean, I see there was much more heavy emphasis placed on memorization than critical thinking skills. And that's what we're trying to develop at the law school level, which it's difficult if you're starting from scratch.
Yeah.
But that's really, in a nutshell, that's kind of what all law is, in the sense of we teach an IRAC method. Can you identify spot issues in someone's case? Can you identify what law, what rules apply? And then the A is analysis. Can you apply the facts to the case law and the laws that are here and come to some sort of persuasive argument and conclusion?
Okay.
That's, in a nutshell, that's all we do for 3 years.
Awesome.
Is do it over and there over and over.
Yeah.
So that's just what critical thinking is. But if you don't come into it learning how to process information, and, you know, students have all this, because that's why when Linda Jordan and Bill Daggett talk about, we are in a world filled with information and knowledge, and students are bombarded with this. Yes, this is the Google generation. They got it all at their fingertips.
Yep.
But it's worthless if you can't apply it in these particular, you know, instances. And so the more we can get them thinking like, okay, there is no right answer. I mean, especially with like law,
yeah.
Students want to be like, I want to know what the answer is. And I'm like, I don't know. Who are you sitting in front of? What judge?
Yeah.
How are you going to persuade the jury? So it's all about, can I critically think? And Harkness is a great way to get them out of their comfort zone and see it from all these different perspectives.
Wow.
So that's why I love using Harkness. And the more we can develop more reflective exercises, I'm big on reflection, because that's what's missing right now in society, is we get information and we just automatically assume what we get is truth. And what we have to be able to do is teach students how to pause for a second and reflect on this information and figure out, how am I going to apply this?
Yeah.
And that's what sometimes is missing.
Yeah.
And Harkness is a great way to spark that.
Right. And then I think you've got a whole other thing at play that you mentioned earlier, of, you know, kids come in and you've got to grab their attention, because a cell phone will take their attention really quick. The technology will take their attention really quick.
Yes.
And it's tough, because that's the same tool that they need to be able to use, I imagine, to do the research, to do the, you know, they have to be able to use this tool, but you're battling keeping their attention on the right thing and them not slipping off into whatever technology world they can slip off into really quickly.
I just saw the other day that movie directors, they changed the screen of the movies every 4 seconds.
Yeah.
Because our attention spans are just so reduced. And I mean, there's studies of people at work where distraction is just commonplace. So we really have to, you know, we can't get rid of the technology, nor do we want to.
Right.
But we have to figure out ways where we can manage it better.
Yep. This has been The Ignition Point, Clayton Bradley Academy's podcast, where every day we work to help students excel through critical thinking, problem solving, collaboration, and use of our lifelong guidelines and life skills. If you'd like to find out more about our school, you can visit us on our webpage, www.claytonbradleyacademy.org, or you can find us on social media sites at CBA STEM or at Clayton Bradley Academy. We hope you have a wonderful day.